We're going to jump off here. And we'll read John 3, 16 and 17, and then we're going to make our confession that they're going to put on the screen. Okay? Let's read. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. Okay, would you throw that up, guys? Let's confess this. I am a believer. The love of God is evident in me. Therefore, I am kind. I am not envious. I don't boast, brag, or strut about. I am not arrogant. I am never rude, crude, or indecent. I am not self-absorbed. I am not easily upset. I don't tally wrongs or celebrate injustice. I delight in truth. I put up with anything and anyone that comes along. And you know that's always a do-over. Let's say that one again. I delight in truth. I put up. Let's say that slowly. I put up with anything and anyone that comes along. Okay. I will trust, hope, and endure no matter what. You mean that?
Yes.
That's good, because you're going to have a test today. And tomorrow, and the day after that. Okay. You know, I grew up 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, those television programs. And one of the programs that I used to like was called One Step Beyond. I don't know if any of you remember that program. But it, you know, it looked into what they call paranormal events or activities that, you know, different situations that it just defied logic. There was just no explanation for this happening, and folks had to make a choice. The narrator would say they took that one step beyond. Well, one of the speakers, I believe it was the gentleman from Nigeria, made a comment about, you know, taking a step. And when he said that, all sorts of bells and whistles went off inside of me. So this, the title of this message is One Step Beyond. You can write that down. But let's go to Joshua 1. I'm going to share this in several translations, because as you've heard me say often, and as is what happened to you, there are things in here that you just never noticed before. But when you develop an understanding of it, man, it's going to cause you to take off. So we got back because our flight was delayed, then delayed, then delayed again. And when they said it was delayed, we knew we weren't going to make our connection because we were going through Dulles. I just sensed it's only Washington, D.C. You get a car and we'll drive home. Then when Pastor Ed called me, we were talking about it, he said, I'm sensing we should just get a car and drive home. I said, yep, that's what I'm getting. So Dolores got us a car, and we drove home. Stopping and such on the way, I must have got home about, well, maybe 20 after 1 this morning. And thank you, Dolores, because Dolores offered, and Elder Bill, they offered to, you know, handle the morning services. And we really appreciate that, and appreciate the concern that they show for their pastors. But just because God sent me to Tulsa, and I had to go on and endure things, that for me that's not a good enough reason not to fulfill my responsibility as pastor, just because I'm tired. Tired's not an excuse or a good enough reason. He said he will renew my strength. And I have his joy, so you know I have his strength. But in Joshua 1, This is the New King James Version. We're going to read the first five verses. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Verse 3. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses, from the wilderness of this Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, and the land of the Hittites. The land of the Hittites. What does that mean? What do you think that means? It says the land of the Hittites. It means the Hittites own this land. And God said, next, okay. So I'm giving you the land of the Hittites and to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. And there are several things you can shout about because of what God said. And there are a lot of things that you can get excited about because God had just told Joshua what he'd given him. He had just told Joshua what he would do for him. He had just promised Joshua that he would never, ever abandon him. You know, that is something to get excited about. But there's something else that's going on there that we miss. And I've come to realize that it's probably one of the primary reasons why we don't see consistent manifestations of God's promises. How many of you would like to see the manifestation of God's promises consistently in your life? Only a few. How many of you would like to see that? Okay. I mean, see, that's part of the problem. You ask questions, say, don't want anyone to know. Hey, it's okay. It's okay. Well, we're going to look at the scripture again. After the death of Moses, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, okay, that means he's about to say something. Before he made any promises, there was something he had to first say. He said, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. See, in that, what we need to understand is God wasn't just giving them instructions. He was giving them a destination. And we miss that. Often God is telling us something and we think, oh, he's just being God and he's giving us commandments. No, he's trying to get you to a place, a very specific place. We need to understand that when God is speaking to us, we want to listen intently to everything that he's saying because he's trying to send us somewhere. Why does he want to send us somewhere? Because he has something there that has our names on it. And if we don't go to where that place is, wherever it is, we won't get it. So he said, arise, go over this Jordan. Look at, how many of you are familiar with Jeremiah 29:11? What does it say? I know the thoughts I have for you. Yep. Some translations say, I know the plans, you know, to give you hope in the future. Well, God knew what he had planned for Joshua and the children of Israel. He knew it before the foundation of the world. And he gave some instructions to Joshua where if Joshua followed the instructions, he would get to that place where he would receive everything that God had promised. Everything. But he had to get to that place. Said, every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you. I'm going to come back to that because that's the principle, but I want you to see that in order to be the beneficiary of the blessings and promises of God, you have to step out from that which is comfortable. You're going to have to step away from things that are familiar. You're going to have to step away from what you think you know. You're going to have to step away from some self-imposed boundaries and venture out into new territories. If you want what God has for you, you cannot stay where you are. Amen. At His direction, you're going to have to step out. I looked up a definition just before the ministry of giving. It says, a step is a movement made by lifting the foot and setting it down again in a new position, accompanied by a shifting of the weight of the body in the direction of the new position. See, so that's not step. Okay. That's like, yeah, I know you want me to go. No, when you step, everything is going in this direction. But see, your step is not complete until the other foot follows. It's an illustration they showed us out in Tulsa. And I started thinking about that. Just because God speaks and you make a little move doesn't mean you took a step. Because once you're in this position, you can decide to just stay here. But when you do this, you're on your way. You're on your way. And anything that's with you, now watch what happens. Very, very sophisticated demonstration here. It's no longer with me. I've stepped away from it. I stepped away. And one thing that you didn't see me do is this. Because if I look back, I might go back. Why? Because there are too many memories. Too much. It's like an old pair of slippers. You know, when you come home after a rough day and you just kick back and put on those slippers, you don't care how they look, but they're just so comfortable. Well, that's what happens. We've gotten so comfortable with things. God is trying to move us into a new era, into a new position, into a new identity, so to speak. And we get stuck because it's unfamiliar. They didn't know it was on the other side of the Jordan. But He said, go. Get up and go to the other side of the Jordan. He said, arise. He didn't say, try and get up. He said, arise. He said, get up. Go. He didn't say, arise if you like it. He didn't say, get up and go to the other side if your friends are in agreement with it. He just said, get up, go. Where? Across the river. And Joshua didn't say, how am I supposed to do that? I like the account that Pastor Ed shares about the first time that Pastors Clinton and Sarah were going to do a radio broadcast. And he's sitting in the office and Pastor Clinton comes by and says, set up this, you know, a recording studio because we're doing a broadcast tomorrow. And he's like, what? I don't know how to do that. And Pastor Clinton said, I said, set up the room, you know, because we're going to do a recording. Pastor was like, but Pastor Clinton, I've never done that. Pastor Clinton said, I said, okay. Pastor Ed said, Holy Ghost, you heard what he said. Okay. We have to set it up. See, God's not concerned about those details. Why? Because He's already promised to supply your every need. We have to just remember it and just go on about doing our business. When I was given the instructions to build the what we now call the Warwick Room, it didn't matter to God that I didn't have any construction experience. Didn't matter to Him that I didn't know what a blueprint was, much less knew how to read one. Didn't matter to God that I didn't know anything about building codes or construction terms. Didn't matter. Yet I'm sitting in meetings with contractors using construction terms I've never heard of. And just coming out of my mouth. Why? Because I figured, see, to me it was a very simple formula. God speaks to the head as to how He wants the people utilized. As one of the people, I had to choose to believe that my pastors hear clearly from God. God knows all about me. He knows everything that I know and don't know. And if he tells my leaders to use me, then my only answer is yes. And I just figure whatever I need to get it done, it'll come to me somehow along the way. Because I couldn't go and say, God, I don't know about any construction. He said, oh yeah, that's right, I forgot about that. So you understand, there are a lot of people in this world named Gregory. I just got you two mixed up. No, he knew exactly what I knew and what I don't know. And it didn't matter to him. So I figured if it didn't matter to him, it didn't matter to me. I'm not God. Okay? And if it didn't work, ain't my fault. I'm being obedient to what I'm told to do. So he'd have to work something out. But he said to him, go over this Jordan. Please say this Jordan. See, that was very specific. He too was telling them, go over here. Right here. You can't say, wait a minute, but it's much lower if we go further down. No, he said, go over this Jordan. What? Probably some of the things that you need along the way you're going to pick up. But if you don't come over here and you decide you like it better going over here, well, guess what? His provisions aren't over here. So you go over here thinking you're being obedient and wind up in a lot of trouble, and you go whining. I thought you said no one would be able to stand against me. Yeah, if you went over there. So it's very important that we follow God's instructions to the letter. He said, go over this Jordan. Where? Right here. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you. I've given you. You can't get comfortable in one place. He didn't say go across the Jordan and just stand there and march in place. He said, yep, every place I put my foot, he's given me. Depending on how big your foot is, that's all you have. Okay, yeah, I'd have more than you because I have 16s. But if all I do is just stay right here because I don't want to venture. The Hittites are out there. They're not going to like me coming over, taking away their land. Well, first of all, I'm not taking it away. God is giving it to me. Okay? So how God gets it to give it to me is between God and the Hittites. I just have to do what he said. What did he say? Every place where the sole of my foot will tread, he has given me. So that means I have to start stepping. Moving around, where? Throughout all the boundaries that he said, I have to make sure I cover every inch because that's what he gave me. The Common English Bible says, I'm giving you every place where you set your foot exactly as I promised. The Complete Jewish Bible says, I'm giving you every place you will step on with the sole of your foot. The Contemporary English Version said, wherever you go, I'll give you that land. Wherever you go. The Good News says, as I told Moses, I have given you and all my people to the entire land that you're marching over. I like what the Message Bible says about it. The Message Bible says, as soon as I get back to it, I'm giving you every square inch of the land you set your foot on. Every square inch. The Voice says every place you walk. And the New Life says I've given you every place where the bottom of your foot steps. I'm telling you, folks, I'd be stepping, sliding, jumping, but there wouldn't be a place in there that did not have my footprint because God said he's given it to me. All I have to do is step on it. Well, guess what? He said he's giving us the mall, beginning with the Sears building. That's what he said. So it means every place we put our foot, around there is ours. It's ours. We need to be walking in more places than just Fairway for their hot buffet. Okay? All right? See, folks, God, he had plans for us before the foundation of the world. We have to understand that. That's the real deal. He has plans. You know how you want to go somewhere, someone asks you to do something, say, oh, no, I have plans. Well, God has plans. Before you were formed in your mother's womb, he had plans specifically for you. And whether or not you realize them is dependent on whether or not you listen and obey his instructions. Because he's going to take you down the path that ends in the manifestation of everything that he promised you. And so the question you want to ask yourself is, do I really want everything that God said? And I know that seems like a simple question, right? But how come we don't ask it? Or when we ask it and we get the answer, we don't like the answer and we don't do it. We look at someone else and say, why can't I do what they're doing? Ain't part of the plan. That's why. Because what's coming to them won't work for you. It's designed to be a blessing to them. It'll be a problem for you. That's why you have to make sure that you're finding out what God said and never be limited. This is what Pastor Tok said from Nigeria. Never be limited by what you think you can do. Okay? Never. See, if I was limited by what I thought I could do, I wouldn't be here. I left when the academy closed and I was asked to move over and assist in facilities, and given that project, I'm like, thank you, I love you, I still attend services, but I don't do construction. No. I didn't know then it wasn't about construction. God was teaching me some things about following his lead. Because he had something else in store for me, and I didn't know it. That's why it's important to keep the right attitude, even when you don't like the instructions. Or you don't like the way they were given, or whatever it is. I'm not accustomed to being spoken to that way. Well, get used to it. I mean, this is who you report to. Oh, no, well, when people report to me, I handle them a different way. Well, good. But that's not the way it is right now. You have to comply with this personality. For what reason? I don't know. Ask God. Because one thing that Pastor Red and I found out, and Pastor Clinton and Pastor Sarah told us this many times, they never called anyone into the ministry. God is the one that spoke to every person that's employed by the ministry and told them to come. They didn't go. We didn't go out and recruit anyone. And at the interview sessions, we are very clear. Why are you here? So I asked, why are you here? God told me, are you sure? Yes. No, seriously, are you sure? And they looked at me strangely, and I said, let me tell you why I'm saying that. This is a workplace. People don't just walk around all day, oh, praise the Lord. All the work's going to get done. It's a workplace with workplace rules and workplace attitudes. And at times you're going to be given some instructions, and you better know that God called you to be here. And so that's all I'm asking you again. Are you sure God called you here? They say yes. We say, okay, that's fine. But now no one can come back and say, well, I didn't think, whoa, hold it. You told us that God told you to come. Well, God knew this was going to be given to you. So if he told you to come and he knew you were going to be given a specific assignment, don't you think he would equip you to handle it? But if you don't step away from who you think you are and what you think you know, you'll never realize it. You got to take a step beyond you so you can get to what God has planned for you. Look at this account in Matthew. I saw this differently also. It's in the New Living Translation, Matthew 14, start at verse 22. Immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. After sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there alone. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land. Just seeing all these miracles, Jesus telling them, get into the boat, go to the other side. They think they're in trouble. For a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. Now, I just saw something here that's interesting. It says they were fighting heavy waves. It doesn't say they were losing to them. They were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came towards them walking on the water. When the disciples saw this, being the great men of faith, oh no, that doesn't say that. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, it's a ghost! Okay. But Jesus spoke to them at once, don't be afraid. Take courage. I am here. Then Peter called to him, Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water. Now, let's just think about how much faith that statement took. Because suppose it wasn't Jesus. And he's saying, okay, so all it takes for me to get this fool out of the boat is to say, yes, I'm Jesus? Okay. All right. No, Peter had to really believe that he was talking to Jesus. And that if he did what Jesus said, he would be fine. So right now, the boy's looking pretty good. Okay. Yes, come, Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water towards Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified. Now I'm saying, now wait a minute. The wind and the waves were there before he got out of the boat. You ever think about that? As he's climbing out of the boat, the sea is churning. The wind is blowing. It didn't seem to faze him then. Why? Because he wasn't looking at that. He was looking at Jesus. And his focus was on Jesus and on what Jesus said. When he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. Save me, Lord, he shouted. Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. You have so little faith. Why did you doubt me? When they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped. Message Bible. Okay. Verse 24. Meanwhile, the boat was far out to sea when the wind came up against them, and they were battered by the waves. About 4 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them walking on the water. They were scared out of their wits. A ghost, they said, crying out in terror. But Jesus was quick to comfort them. Courage, it's me, don't be afraid. Peter, suddenly bold. See? No. When you have focused your eyes and you realize that you're looking at Jesus, a boldness should come. There should be that sudden boldness that says, everything here is fine. I can step away. I can move towards because this is Jesus that I have my eyes on. So that means they must have been shivering in their boots at the waves and the wind. But suddenly, Peter got bold. He said, Master, if it's really you, call me to come to you on the water. And of course, Jesus called him. And the Message Bible says, jumping out of the boat, Peter walked on the water to Jesus. But when he looked down at the waves churning beneath his feet. See, Peter had already stepped out beyond himself. Because in order for waves to be churning beneath your feet, you have to be standing on them. Okay. So if you're standing on the waves, right, you are standing on the waves, and they're churning beneath your feet, and you're looking down at them, why would you think all of a sudden now you're going to sink? You jump out of the boat and land, and you don't go under the water. The Bible doesn't say you went under the water and you had to swim back up. And oh, where's Jesus? Dries. No, he jumped out of the boat and was standing on the churning waves, walking. And then he looks down and, hey, these waves be churning down here. And I start thinking, you ever start thinking what the other 11 were doing? I'm serious. I start thinking about that. Peter gets out of the boat. What are the other 11 saying? Look at this fool doing. See, either he's saying something stupid or he's doing something stupid. Peter, you can't walk on the water. These are 11 of his closest friends. Okay. How many times have you had people tell you, you can't do that? And then they act like you have brain damage. They say, who do you think you are? Okay. And some of you will stop. Nobody can do this except you. Oh, you think you're better than me? And folks say, no, I'm not saying that. Like, hey, I told you a time I went to this barber for the first time. He was kind of snide guy. Didn't bother me. And he's talking a lot of foolish stuff, talking about believers. And he wasn't saying believers, saying those people that, you know, believe all this, that. And then he pulls out the straight razor and puts a lather on. And he has the razor about right here. And he says, you don't believe any of that stuff, do you? I said, yes, I do. I believe every bit of it. He said, oh, so you're saying you're better than me. If you're telling me that you go out and you know that you're sinning, yes, I'm better than that. He said, finally, somebody that wouldn't give in. He said, I mess with people like that all the time. They all give in and start backpedaling. He said, how come you didn't backpedal? I said, backpedal from what? He said, well, I had the razor next to your neck. I said, I came in here for a shave. That's all you're going to be able to do is shave me. Because the same one we're talking about will make sure of that. We can't get to the place where just because it looks like it's dangerous, we stop believing. Peter was walking in the manifestation of Jesus' promise. He was walking on it. There are too many times, folks, when you're walking right down the middle of the manifestation of what you've been believing for, and then, like I said in that song, that now the earth starts to quake, and you think God has forsaken you, and you stop. And not only stop, you retreat and go back. And well, we have some real good reasons. We really do. Maybe we can sit down and you go through a box of Kleenex. You know, all my life, people treated me like this. Oh, well, my skin's the wrong color. You don't understand, you know, I live in a ghetto, or I live in the hood, or I live in a cardboard box under the bridge. My mother left me when I was 5. What does that have to do? I'm not saying those things, you know, don't have any emotional significance, but they don't have to stop you. Why? Because when you were born, God knew your mother was going to leave you when you were 5. And for some strange reason, he didn't seem to think that would change his plan for you. So the only thing that maybe needs to change is the way we're thinking about it. What folks, what we go through doesn't matter. What happens to us really doesn't matter. All that matters is what we think about it. All that matters is how we handle it. I mean, my father asked me one day, and I was trying to get him to stop, because it's one of those questions you don't want to answer. And he was asking me, he said, would your life have been different, you know, if I never left? You know, I won't look at him and go like, duh. You know? I'm like, Dad, it doesn't matter. He said, no, I really want to know. I said, Dad, it really doesn't matter. At that particular point in my life, I was 37 years old. It doesn't matter what happened then. But he kept pressing him like, what do you think? He said, well, you know, I imagine you had been able to do this and this and this and this. And I just said, oh, okay. But he still wouldn't let it go. I said, okay, you want it? Yes, Dad, it would have been different. But do you hear me complaining about it? I think things are pretty good. Married to a beautiful woman. Have Jesus Christ in my life, connected with a great church. Have pastors that love me. If I knew this would work out this way, I'd deliberately go through all that stuff I went through the first few years. You know? But we have to stop. We have to let go. Just like the scriptures say, I didn't invent this. Forgetting those things that are behind. You're going to have to forget them. You're going to have to let them go. And start focusing and pressing to the mark of the prize of the high calling that's in Christ Jesus. That's what we have to do if we're going to receive the manifestations. But you're going to have to make sure that you turn off the words of your homies. Because you just picture yourself, you're in the middle of the Hudson River and suddenly Hurricane Sandy drops in. And you see Jesus walking on the water and he tells you, come on and walk. And you get out of the boat. What are your friends saying? They're probably trying to pull you back in. They fool it. They're definitely telling you. They're hysterical. No, you know what you're doing. You know what you saw. But if Jesus called you, hey, if he called me to come out on the water, guess what? I'm going. It's just that simple. I mean, you know, I have to throw something in. I have written down here. So what do you think they were thinking about? Were they saying, go ahead, homie? Did they turn into the temptation and say, walk on, brother, walk on? I'm telling you, I write what I hear. And I know sometimes he allows my character to come out. But Peter stepped away from himself and walked out onto churning, wind-driven water just because Jesus commanded him to. That's all he needed. Didn't matter. Ooh, I got to show you this. I get like one of my sisters in and go, ooh, 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 got to show you this. Okay. Verse 32 says, the two of them climbed into the boat and the wind died down. The disciples in the boat, having watched the whole thing, worshiped Jesus saying, this is it. You're God's son for sure. I was like, wait a minute here. That means during that whole scenario, they weren't sure. Doing everything that they had seen Jesus do up to that point, they still were not convinced that he was God's son. That's why they stayed in the boat. That's why. I looked at that this morning. It was about 3:30. I looked at that. My eyes popped back open. And I said, they didn't believe until then. They weren't sure. I'm like, that explains it. Because if you think it's Jesus and he says, come, and you see Peter get out and start walking, there should have been 11 more behind him. But they weren't sure. And I started to understand why we sometimes don't move when God says move. We're not sure. We have doubts. We're guilty of having little faith. We're guilty of, as one translation puts it, losing our nerve. We have to be sure that God is and that Jesus is. We have to be sure. We have to make sure we read Matthew 16:16. Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And if we believe that, it should change our behavior. After all, how can we be disobedient when we know Jesus is the Christ? Not might be, but is. That changes it. Changed the disciples to, oh, now we're sure. I'm saying, well, at least they got it. Something made them sure. In John 1, because, again, I said we have to step away. We need to understand that God told Moses, get away. I mean, Abram, get away from your family. Get away from this land. And Abram had to make a choice to step away from all of his customs, everything that he was familiar with. Because, and God said, you go to a place, I will show you. And he didn't say, well, where is it? Eventually he left, because he didn't leave right away. He didn't follow God's instructions fully. Because God said, get away from your family. They call it kindred, means same thing. He took his nephew with him, that's kindred. Okay. But it put them at risk. If he doesn't take his nephew isn't captured by the kings, he doesn't have to take his 312 men, put them at risk to get him back. You have to make sure, folks, that when God sends you someplace, the only people with you are the ones that he assigned to you. Everybody else, you got to say goodbye to. Why? Because they're going to cause you to go through some things that God didn't intend for you to go through. And it may slow you down. Probably will slow you down. But the worst, though, is that it can cause you to miss what God has for you. Because now, when you're bringing along someone that's not supposed to be there, instead of keeping your focus on them, now you're showing on God, now you're showing concern for them and what they're doing. And you're trying to keep them in line with what God told you. He didn't tell it to them. That's why they're not understanding it the way you are. They ain't supposed to be there. And we have to understand that and just go packing. But he had to step away. When you read about the calling of the first disciples, they had to step away. Some of them had lucrative businesses. They had to leave it. Some had wives. They had to leave her. Why? Because Jesus said, come, follow me. And they left and followed him. And he didn't, well, with one he made a promise. He said, come, I'll make you fishers of men. But then I started thinking, you know, Saul of Tarsus had to step away. He was a well-trained Pharisee. Well-trained. And very zealous about what he believed. But he had an encounter with Jesus and he had to step away. He had to step beyond himself, beyond everything he had learned up to that point. And relearn some things. He had to redefine who he was. But look at John 1. Because ultimately we need to understand that Jesus had to step away from himself. See, if he doesn't do that, none of us are sitting here. Before anything else existed, there was Christ with God. He has always been alive and is himself God. He created everything there is. Nothing exists that he didn't make. But then we get down to verse 14. And Christ became a human being and lived here on earth among us. So he made us. God asked him to step beyond himself. And now he put himself in subjection to us, his creation. How many of you put yourself in subjection to your children? Well, Jesus put himself in subjection to his creation. Allowed himself to be judged by his creation. Allowed himself to be murdered by his creation. Why? So he could save his creation. Pastor Sarah's flight was delayed. Missed the connections. Why? Because God didn't love her anymore? No. God so loved her, he wanted her connected with this couple from Angola. And he loved them so much, he wanted them connected with her. So he allowed some things to happen so that they would meet. Both parties had to be willing to go when God said go. It was interesting because we knew that there was a flight delay before you left. I mean, you chose to go to the airport anyway. How many of you would do it? You know your flight's going to be late, but you leave and go to the airport like it was leaving your regular time. I saw one person motion. Everybody else is like, let's see, it was going to leave at 12, now it's going to leave at 3. Why do I need to sit in the airport that long? You just delay. You know, just wait a little longer. I mean, doesn't that make sense? But that's why God said, lean not to your own understanding. Because just because it made sense to us, it wasn't part of his plan for a divine connection to be made. Don't know why yet. May not know on this side. All that's important is that's the connection God wanted made. And everybody had to cooperate so that that connection could be made when God wanted it to be made. Folks, are you getting this?
Yes.
You need to be willing to step away from yourself. Look at Proverbs 3:5. I mentioned it, but you have to see these two. I'm going to read Proverbs 4 and then Proverbs 3, and I'm going to quit. Proverbs 4:26, out of the Voice. Take care you don't stray from the straight path, the way of truth, and you will safely reach the end of your goal, of your road. The easy-to-read version says, it's really simple. I guess that's why they call it easy to read. Make sure you are going the right way and nothing will make you fall. It doesn't get any plainer than that. And when you look at Proverbs 3, verses 5 to 8, again, we'll start off with the easy-to-read version. Trust the Lord completely and don't depend on your own knowledge. With every step you take, think about what he wants, and he will help you. That's not being paranoid. Okay, Father, you sure this is the direction I believe you're sending me now? You know, and you get a sense to go, okay, God, I'm sensing the move over more here toward the right. You know, I'm only moving in this direction because I'm sensing it's you. If this isn't right, let me know. I'll go any direction you want me to go. It's not being paranoid. It's making sure that you're going where your father wants you to go. How many of you use a GPS? Do you turn it off after it gives you a couple of directions? No. You leave it on. And it'll repeat itself sometimes. You know, go bare left 0.2 mile and continue on Route 95 south. Then you get there, okay. Continue on right on Route 95 South. You want to say, you just told me that too. No, it wants to make sure. And we don't get upset with that. Well, just take the time and make sure that you're where you are supposed to be. Go the right way, the scripture says. Verse 7. Please understand this. God is not discounting the education that he paid for, okay, for you. But he said, don't trust in your own wisdom, but fear and respect the Lord and stay away from evil. If you do this, it will be like a refreshing drink and medicine for your body. Listen to how the Living Bible puts this. If you want favor with both God and man, and a reputation for good judgment and common sense, then trust the Lord completely. How many of you want that? You want favor with God and man. You want a reputation for good judgment and common sense? Trust the Lord completely. That's all you have to do. Don't ever trust yourself. Don't ever trust yourself. Okay. In everything you do, put God first, and he will direct you and crown your efforts with success. Yeah. Folks, that and that alone is why we're not successful. We're not trusting God. We're not putting him first. We're not allowing him to direct. One of the models of this church is where the Spirit of God is directing. Now, directing is one thing. Following the directions is something else. If you look at it as a symphony, there is a director. You know, that's right. I mean, what would happen if told Jeremy, gave him a signal, and he just disregarded it, right? You'd be like the guy on A Few Good Men. Disregard the order? Okay. Just you gave the right directions, but they weren't followed. And what you had was a mess. Don't ever trust yourself. Verse 7. Don't be conceited. Sure of your own wisdom. I know what I'm talking about. I've been doing this thing for 15 years. Nobody knows more about this than I do. You're conceited. Sure of your own wisdom. Instead, trust and reverence the Lord. Because see, when you say that, you're saying God doesn't even know as much as you do. Okay? Turn your back on evil. So God must consider that being evil. And when you do that, then you will be given, listen to this, then you will be given renewed health and vitality. Some of us are struggling with symptoms in our bodies because we're relying on our own wisdom. Our own wisdom. Now, come on, I'd have to be an absolute... My next door neighbor, growing up, his dad had all these funny sayings. He, you know, in those underdog cartoons where they had this thing called fractured fairy tales, where these guys would come up with these, you know, yeah, Rocky and Bullwinkle. Yeah, thank you, Deborah. But he would always mispronounce words. And to him, there was no such thing as an idiot. It was an idiot. And that's what he said. What are you, some kind of idiot? Okay. Well, folks, that's what it's really like. when you think about it, God sent me to a doctor who was Hindu, and is slowly making the transition to Christianity. But not only that, when we first went to him, he was like, gotta take this medicine. But it got to the point, he said, I'm gonna write you a prescription. He looked at me and said, you're not gonna fill it, are you? And I just smile. And He called me. I know I told you this before. He called me one night. He said, I was just thinking about you. And I'm like, why? You know, he said, well, I just want you to tell, I just want, you know, how's your blood pressure been? Fine. What was the last reading? I don't know. When's the last time you've taken it? I don't know, maybe about a month. He said, well, I want you to take it for me right now. I'm like, why? I feel fine. He said, well, just humor me. I said, why don't I tell you a joke? I want to take my blood pressure. I said to him, if I take it now, it's going to be higher because you're aggravating me. Like that, you know. But I took my blood pressure, and it was higher than we wanted. And I'm thinking, I'm like, don't tell me to increase anything, because I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to do it. This is what I'm thinking. He says to me, why don't you take some golf and take some time in prayer? I was like, excuse me? He said, oh, no, no. Remember you told me every time you study and prepare to minister, your blood pressure drops. I said, it does. Well, go act like you're preparing to minister. Go take some time in prayer. He said, apparently your body responds to prayer more than medicine. Okay. This is my doctor. Now, I'd have to be some kind of idiot. Okay. To think that I could do something else on my own when a heathen doctor just said, the key to your blood pressure being under control is the time you spend in prayer. See, we're looking for a magic bullet, and he's giving us the word. This says, when you do that, you will be given health and vitality. Folks, it's time for us to start moving in the direction God is giving us. Period. Stop looking for alternatives. Please stop thinking about how it was. God is fully aware how it was. I'm fully aware. Everybody's fully aware how it was. If it wasn't for how it was, it wouldn't be how it is. The only reason we're standing here is because of how it was. And God wanted us to get to this point, to this place, so he can take us to another place. And when we get to that place, we can't get comfortable there and say, we like this, because he'll move us again. And guess what? We'll say the same thing. No, we like it how it was. I mean, isn't that what the Hebrews did? Why? Because they didn't have food? They in the wilderness? It'd been better for us to be back in slavery. Oh, right, yeah. Right, where they kill you and rape your women and all that, so that's better. What are you, some kind of idiot? Okay. No, we have to get going and cross this Jordan. This Jordan. We have to cross it and know that every place we set our foot, he's given to us. You just have to make sure that it's him. Now, don't look at a place and lust after it. You see a house you like, and you go there and you walk around. Every time, place I set my foot. No, if God says, this is what I am giving to you, that's one thing. If it's not that, then it's our leaning to our own understanding. Would you like everybody to stand for a moment? It's nothing more than just symbolism. Because it said, you have to step beyond yourself. And where you are represents where you are, where you're standing right now, and everything that's associated with it. And God is trying to move you into a different place. And all you have to do is just take a step. So I want everyone to just take a step. Just take a step. Okay? And when you take that step, or as you're taking that step, don't look back. Don't concern yourself. See, when Lot's wife looked back, she became as hard as her heart was to what God was doing for her. You don't want to turn into a pillar of salt. Because once you step forward, it's almost as if everything that was behind doesn't even exist anymore. So what are you looking at? When you think about it, if it doesn't exist, there's nothing to see. We want to get to the place where we keep our eyes fixed on how God is moving now. What are our instructions right now? Stop thinking about what you're going through. That's back there. Because we're already promised that we'll be healthy. So if your body's going through something, don't let that be your excuse to stop stepping. As a matter of fact, let it be a motivator. Because when you get over to Jordan and start walking around, it promises health, vitality. So you want to know, what's the answer, Lord? Obedience. Obedience to what? To what I'm telling you to do now. All the fear will go away. I'm telling you, folks, when God showed me that, I was no longer afraid of high blood pressure. I no longer paid attention to its reputation. And too many of us are paying attention to the reputation of the adversary. Just because it's a reputation doesn't mean it's the truth. Okay, fine. Somewhere along the line, it means he had to knock out someone. So what? Doesn't mean he's going to knock out you. Because the Bible says no weapon formed against you shall prosper. Yeah, but my best friend, they believed the same thing and they died. You don't know what they believed. And you don't know what instructions they were given. You don't know if they were walking in obedience to God or not. And quite frankly, it ain't none of your business. You are to keep yourself focused entirely on Jesus and what he's instructing you to do now, and watch and experience where you'll wind up. I had no idea. I'm going to say this, and I am going to do the altar call. But one time we were in Ocean, it's the first time we were in Ocean City for Thanksgiving, and we're staying in a suite at the Hilton Hotel. I had never stayed in a suite before in my life. Never. When Deacon Phyllis and I would go on vacations, an upgrade for us was a Red Roof Inn or Motel 6. I mean, we were splurging then. We had to find places. The limit was room, tax, everything had to be less than $30. And it had to be next to a McDonald's. 99-cent menu. And so I'm now walking out of my suite in the Hilton on the boardwalk of Ocean City. I still get, you know, when I think about it. And I looked out the window as we were walking down the hallway, and there was a McDonald's. We were on our way to one of the good restaurants, fine restaurants there. And I stopped and I looked. And Phil was like, honey, what's the matter? And I looked at her, tears streaming down my face. And she said, why? I said, I remember when McDonald's had to be our breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Because that's all we could afford. But just because I chose to be obedient to what God said, now I'm walking out of a suite in the Hilton Hotel, going to a 5-star restaurant. Why? Because I'm so special? No, you do the same thing to anyone. Now, I'm not gonna, I can stand right next to mom, right next to mom when I tell you this, because she opened, the road there was not smooth. There's some stuff along, there's some bonehead things that I did. There's some things that I had to endure. There's some things I had to learn. There's some things I had to let go of. There's some things that were uncomfortable. And I'd go through them all to the 10th power to be where I am today. It's a testimony of what God will do to anybody that will just listen and obey. You may be seated. Well, folks, it all starts with a very, very simple confession. I mean, I made the confession, then I didn't want to make it public that I made the confession, because after all, I had an image to uphold. I don't know the who, but I had to uphold it. And I was only coming to church once. That's it. Why? I was interested in the woman, not the gospel. But when I came, I found out that the gospel was interested in me. Changed my whole perspective. And then I never left. So when people tease me and they say, well, you said you're only going to church once. I said, I did go once. I just never left once I came. Okay, that's it. But I had to make a confession. I had to believe in my heart and say with my mouth that Jesus Christ is God's Son. Now, I said it, and I didn't want to stand. I held on to the seat to make sure I wouldn't stand. And I opened my eyes, and I heard everybody applauding, and it looked like I was on an elevator, and the floor was going down, and I realized I was standing up. Because God said, I got him here. He's going to get the whole dose now. Well, God has you here today because he wants you to get it.